Hey, everybody. Welcome back to our podcast. This is Murder with My Husband. I'm Peyton Moreland.
And I'm Garrett Moreland.
And he's the husband.
And I'm the husband.
We just want to, again, thank every single one of you for listening to us. We had a super active week on social media this week, and it was really, really fun for us. A reminder, if you want to follow us on there, it's just Murder with My Husband. I'm also going to give another update about our case suggestions. We are doing it a new way. So if you just want to visit the link in our Instagram and click case suggestions on there, and then you can just put it in there and it's all organized and super well for us on our end.
We actually have another Patreon episode coming out, so we're both pretty excited for that. And if you're curious on how to find it, or if you're a little confused, all of our socials, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok, we have a link in there and you can go directly to Patreon and you can check it out there.
Okay, so do you have 10 seconds for this episode?
I think I have 10 seconds. I feel like it's been getting harder for the 10 seconds, but summer's coming up. I want to get a barbecue. So if anyone has any tips or suggestions on which barbecue to get, let me know.
Wait, is that what it's called? A barbecue?
Yeah, barbecue or smoker. I mean, there's, those are different.
For but some reason, it just isn't barbecue. Sounding right to me right now. But I don't. It's like, you know, when you say or read a word and then all of a sudden it's like not right in your head, even though it is right. That's what just happened to me when you did that.
Yeah.
But yeah, we do need a barbecue. So
I'm excited.
Okay, so our case this week was suggested through our new suggestion form by Rachel Smith. And so thank you for suggesting that. Our sources are abc.net, a couple sources on YouTube that are more detailed in the episode notes if you want to check that out, Wikipedia, bbc.com, and ABC News In-Depth episode, smh.com. Okay, so our episode starts off today. Sarah Spears is the daughter of Don and Carol Spears. She has an older sister named Amanda. Together, they grew up in the country and attended boarding school in Perth, Western Australia. So our case is from Australia this week.
So what exactly is boarding school? I guess I've never been clear on what is boarding school. Sorry to interrupt already right in.
Boarding school is where you live at school, like room and board.
Mm-hmm. So like Zoe 101.
Yeah, I've actually never seen an episode. Oh, you haven't?
Okay.
So as sisters, Sarah and Amanda got along very well, although they were total opposites, their personalities, but they were best friends. Sarah is said to be the type of person who would go out of her way to make sure everyone around her was happy. She was compassionate and could light up a room with her affectionate personality. In 1996, Sarah and Amanda moved to South Perth, where they share a flat, which is an apartment, but flat makes me feel a little bit cooler. So I'm going to continue calling it a flat.
Okay.
They are enjoying life together as young adults. And in mid-January 1996, their parents had come down to visit. After a great time together, Don and Carol got back into their car and head back to their home in the country, not knowing that that was the last time either of them would ever see Sarah, their daughter, again. On Friday, January 26th, 1996, Sarah and her friends are planning to go to Kings Park, where there is an outdoor concert happening. They thought they would bring some food, sit down, eat dinner, and enjoy the concert together. After dinner, as day turns into night, Amanda, Sarah's sister, picks up Sarah and her friends and takes them to the Ocean Beach Hotel to drink and hang out.
Okay.
From the sounds of it, the hotel bar is in the middle of a market that is super lively on a Friday night. It's a great place to hang out and have fun with your friends. There's a whole bunch of bars and shops around it. So it's just kind of on a Friday night, a place where young adults go to hang out.
Got it.
Around midnight, Amanda drives back to the Ocean Beach Hotel to pick up her sister and her friends once again. So she dropped them off and is now back to pick them up again. The plan was to then take them to Claremont, which is like a different city, where a popular night stop called Club Bay View was located, and they were going to finish the night there. Before getting out of the car, Sarah hugged and kissed her sister and thanked her for the ride and then ran into the club with her friends. And again, this new spot in Claremont is also very lively for young adults. Around 2 a.m., Amanda has gone to sleep, and so Sarah decides she will catch a taxi home instead of having Amanda come pick her up again.
Okay.
Sarah tells her friends that she is going to head home for the night and runs out to the end of the road to find a phone booth. So her friends stay in the club and she's done. Before she does, she stops and talks to the club guard, which I am thinking is the bouncer. And she tells him that she's headed home to see Amanda. And I'm assuming that they are friends because he knows who Amanda is and everything. At 2:06 a.m., Sarah calls Swan Taxis, but instead of ordering the taxi to South Perth, where Amanda is at their home sleeping, she orders her taxi to a suburb called Mosman Park. And she had a friend who lives there whom she had been with earlier that day. And it's assumed that she decided it would be cheaper and faster to go there mm-hmm. and crash instead of going all the way home to Amanda.
Okay, let me just recap real quick where we are. So she's at this club. Basically, she decides to go home. So she gets a taxi to a different place that's not her home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly. And I did think this was a little weird because the bouncer did say she was going home to Amanda, correct?
Okay.
But not even 20 seconds, I don't know how long it was, but just the time it took her from walk to there to the end, to the phone booth, the end of the road, she's now going to a different place. But maybe it was one of those things where he knows Amanda, so it's just easier to be like, I'm heading home. Mm-hmm. Yeah, see ya, you know. Sarah crosses the road and waits for the taxi that she had just called at the intersection on Sterling Highway. That's the name of the road. Three guys in a car pull up around that time and notice Sarah standing there alone. And as they drive away, they notice a car pulling up where Sarah is standing, but they turn at the intersection and drive away. Mm. At 2:09, Sarah's taxi arrives at the intersection, looks up the road towards the phone booth, down the road the other way, and Sarah is nowhere to be found. She was gone and is now missing.
Okay, got it.
On the Monday after Sarah Spears went missing, her sister tried calling after not seeing her since that Friday night. When Sarah doesn't answer, Amanda reaches out to her friends asking if they had seen her or heard from her since she left the club that night. They hadn't either. Amanda decides she's going to call the police. Police immediately begin circulating pictures of Sarah along with what she was wearing that night. They distinguish her beige chunky heels that she had been wearing that night. Search teams search the nightlife and club areas are scavenged. Hundreds of people come forward trying to help. Every lead is chased. Nothing helps. Sarah is not found.
Okay, so basically it's 2:00 in the morning. Some random car comes by and...
And next thing you know, Sarah is gone.
Okay.
Yes. So now we're jumping back. In the early 1960s, in a suburb called Shenton Park that was just 10 miles away from Claremont, which is where Sarah went missing from, Trevor and Janie Rimmer have started their life together and eventually have a baby named Jane Rimmer in 1973. According to Hunt for a Killer, Jane is a quiet child but grows into a fun-loving young woman who wants to work with children one day. As the time comes for her to move out of her parents' house, Jane gets her own flat and fulfills her dream by getting a job at a children's center. 5 months after Sarah Spears was last seen in Claremont, it's now Saturday, June 8th, 1996. 23-year-old Jane Rimmer links up with her friends at none other than the Ocean Beach Hotel. They eat dinner, they have some drinks, and then they decide to continue on with their night at a club called Continental. They dance and hang out, but around 11:30 p.m., they decide to walk to another club nearby called Bayview. According to her friend, Jane was reluctant to go to this specific club because she didn't like it. But when the group arrived, they discovered that there was an extremely long line to get in and they decided to instead just call it a night. We're not going to go to another club. We're just going to be done. So these two stories are sounding eerily familiar and they're only 5 months apart, Jane and Sarah.
And they both are staying at the same hotel and both went to the same
club. Clubs. Yes. Although Jane had not wanted to go to Bayview, she, unlike her friends, was not ready to call it a night. As her friends are getting in the taxi, they try to convince her to leave with them, but she just wants to hang out a bit longer in this nightlife, have a little bit more fun before she ends her night.
Okay.
The next day, when Jane does not show up to a Sunday lunch with her parents, Trevor and Janie visit their daughter's flat, but immediately call police when she isn't there. Once notified, police draw the conclusion that because only 5 months earlier, Sarah had gone missing from the same area mm-hmm. with a near identical story, that means to them that these cases have to be connected.
Where's Jane's friends?
They left and then never saw her again. They left her there to continue hanging out and having fun and see her again. Police notify task forces that the cases could be worked together by a special task force called MACRO. Okay, if you're like me, you probably care about eating healthy. I feel like we've all tried a million different ways to do that, but
McDonald's. Nah, just kidding.
But honestly, it became a no-brainer when I got my first Hungry Root delivery, and I have to tell you, I ordered Hungry Root.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then a week later, they reached out wanting to be a sponsor of the show. And I was like, good to go, because I already went on and ordered Hungry Root.
We seriously loved it. Before we were even sponsored and Peyton ordered it just because she wanted to try it, it was so cool. Like, it came in this box. There's all these different foods and they're healthy. They're good for you. There's snacks, stuff to make dinner recipes. It was amazing. The very first night we got it, we made our dinner and we both loved it.
Well, and it's really easy. You actually just take a short quiz and Hungry Root will get to know your personal health goals. And then they'll build you a personalized cart with all your grocery needs for the week and give you delicious recipe recommendations. So honestly, I can just go and pick a recipe, boom, puts all of it in my cart. It's crazy.
Everything from Hungry Root follows a simple standard. It's gotta taste good, be quick to make, and contain whole trusted ingredients.
So right now, Hungry Root is offering Murder With My Husband listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/husband to get 40% off your first delivery and your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/husband. Don't forget to use our link so they know that we sent you. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations.
Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. So I speak a little bit of Spanish. Okay, that's not true. I speak Spanish fluently for the most part. And Peyton has always wanted to learn a language. So she's actually started using Babbel and she's gonna use it the next time we go to Mexico. And I'm really excited to see how her Spanish is.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/husband. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/husband, spelled BABBEL.com/husband. Rules and restrictions may apply.
All right, we're jumping into an ad real quick. This is Shopify. I personally love Shopify. I've been using it for 7-8 years now since I've met Peyton. I've been using it for so long. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business.
Whether you're selling sleuthing supplies or marketing mystery merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms.
Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because business that grow, grow with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/husband, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/husband now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/husband, shopify.com/husband. So this special task force called Macro is created in order to work just on these cases, these two missing women around the same age, around the same area, same color skin, similar time, everything, similar lifestyles. Pictures of Jane are posted in hopes, just like Sarah was, that someone had seen her or something, but no, nothing comes forward. On Saturday, August 3rd, 1996, 55 days after Jane went missing, a family driving around in Wellard stops to pick some wildflowers.
Oh, no.
During the adventure, the mother of the family stumbles across a body in the grassy wooded area. Jane Rimmer's naked body had been discovered.
Oh, no.
So keep in mind, Sarah's body
hasn't been found, but Jane's body was found.
Yes.
Okay.
9 months after Jane Rimmer's body was discovered, it's now Saturday, March 15th, 1997.
Okay.
27-year-old Kira Glennon has been drinking with her colleagues after work, but then after that, they decide to keep the night going and make their way to the Continental. The Continental is crowded, and Kira decides to stay for only 20 minutes. She grabbed her jacket and makes her way out. While walking down Sterling Highway, a few men are hanging outside when they call out to Kira about how dangerous it is to hitchhike alone at night. Kira waves them off and keeps walking. But not too much farther down the road did she make it before the men noticed a car pull up and Kira begins talking to the driver. The vehicle was light colored, according to the men, but they weren't paying too much attention. They didn't know her.
Yeah.
Next thing they know, Kira and the vehicle is gone. None of the men see her get into the vehicle, but as they look down the road a couple minutes later, they notice that she and the vehicle is gone.
I can't believe that this can happen three times
in at the same area, same
place, probably all around the same exact spot.
Yes, within like a year, right? Yeah. 1996, 1996, now 1997.
Yeah.
Like, it's been on the news. They were taking the mm-hmm. disappearances seriously.
So everyone was like, we probably shouldn't be alone, which is probably honestly why those guys said, hey, it's dangerous. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure they weren't trying to, like, they were being serious about it.
Mm-hmm. So the next day, Kira's mom reports her missing when she doesn't hear from her. Panic sets in as the information is spread about the possible serial killer, because Jane's body was found, remember? A $250,000 reward is set up by the Western Australia government, the largest ever reward, in return for any news that leads to an arrest.
Okay.
There were so many people around the nights these girls went missing in the area. In fact, two separate groups of men had seen that they saw two different women near a car, but there's nothing. There's nothing. There's no information.
Well, also, it's hard because I'm sure a lot of different people saw people next to cars.
Exactly.
At nighttime. Mm-hmm. So. Yes.
And like, this is such a busy area. I know you said that, but at the same time, it's almost the best. Like, you know, when they say hide in plain sight, mm-hmm. it was so busy that would had anyone even noticed a little scream or a little tussle? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's already lively. It's nighttime. People are partying. People are hanging out.
Yep.
On April 3rd, 1997, only 19 days after Kira disappeared, a labor man comes across a body along a sandy track on Perth's northern outskirts. Police confirm that the partially clothed body was in fact Kira Glennon, and that the killer had most likely gone off the main road, taken a separate track to get to where the body was dumped. So he went out of his way to get here.
Dang, so there's two bodies. We've now found Jane and Kira.
Yes, and Sarah's still missing. And all of these happened with about in a year.
Dang, it's crazy that they're finding that these bodies have been found fairly quickly, I feel like.
Yes, very quickly.
And Sarah's hasn't.
Yes, that is a point in this case that will continue on the whole case.
Okay.
In the time following the killings, Claremont was in a panic, obviously. Weekend nights that used to be bright and busy became deserted. The people of West Australia did all they could to help. Crime Stoppers was overloaded with calls, but nothing seemed to come of it. No one came forward that they knew anything about the cars that had been witnessed those nights talking to the girls. Cab drivers are all suspects at the beginning, but after taking DNA of thousands of cab drivers, nothing comes of it.
Okay.
The next suspect is a man named Lance Williams. The next public suspect, I should say, that is announced is a man named Lance Williams, who is followed around for more than 2 years in this investigation. Whoa. Because in the past, he had driven around Claremont at night on the weekends, offering women rides home instead of them having to call taxis.
Why did they figure out why he did that?
I think just maybe to be nice or make some money.
Was he trying to pick up homemade girls? Uber?
I don't know. Huh. I don't know. They don't ever release it. And he was never charged and eventually dismissed. So as we're on the subject, I am going to say here, this investigation is super private, which is why I don't know why Lance. So
there's a lot of information not released.
Yes. Up until just a few years ago, this was a mysterious case. Okay. No one knew any information about it. No one, the things that were discovered came out of the blue. Like it wasn't publicly told, if that makes sense. So despite the special effort for the search of Sarah, Jane, and Kira's killer, because at this point they're assuming that Sarah has also died. They just haven't found the body. 12 years after the tear, nothing had been released. No arrests had been made. Efforts had been long spent on Lance Williams, but now the case was cold and we have this empty period of time where the public is told nothing about the case.
I mean, I guess though, if there's no camera evidence, if no one saw any license plates or a car and there's no DNA evidence, like what do you do?
Yes.
What are you?
Well, and the public's like, what do? We haven't been told anything. They've said we found the bodies, right? There's been no this is how the bodies were found. I mean, oh, I said they were naked, but that comes out later. So the public doesn't even know how they were found. How they died hasn't been released. So all they know is that, hey, these three girls went missing around the same area. Two of the bodies have been found. This guy was a suspect. They spent a long time on the taxi drivers, but now nothing. And it's not like this case is being forgotten. It's being reported on. I have listened to podcasts cover this case before anything was solved.
Is it for a reason? Because they're trying to keep everything private so they can find who did this, or you're not sure?
I'm assuming that's why, yes, but it just was weird.
Okay.
It was weird. Rarely do you see such a public case that was a serial killer.
And for 12 years, not hear much about it.
And not hear anything about it.
We're jumping into an ad right now. And I, no joke, I've had this question. I think about it all the time because I hate getting sick. Do you ever wonder why some people just don't get sick? One of the reasons you can help yourself from getting sick is Armra colostrum.
Okay, obviously, I had no idea that colostrum is the first nutrition we receive in life and is an exclusive source of all the essential nutrients we need in order to thrive. So what's amazing is Armra colostrum is a proprietary concentrate of bovine colostrum that harnesses over 400 functional nutrients to strengthen your immune barriers, your body's inside suit of armor, and the first line of defense against harmful particles from the environment that can trigger inflammation and actually make you sick.
I'm not saying that it 100% works for everybody, because obviously you never know, but all I'm saying is I haven't been sick since I started taking it.
Well, and the science behind it is so cool. Armra colostrum strengthens all four layers of your gut wall, where 80% of your immune cells are housed, and it's a rich, exclusive source of antibodies that optimize your immune defense during cold and flu season.
Plus, in clinical trials, bovine colostrum was found to be at least 3 times more effective than the flu vaccine at preventing the flu. We've worked out a special offer for our audience. Receive 15% off your first order. Go to tryarmra.com/husband or enter husband to get 15% off your first order. Again, that's tryarmra.com/husband.
All right, you guys, Audible is your one-stop app for all things audio entertainment, from bestsellers and the latest releases to celebrity memoirs and gripping mysteries. Audible's library is brimming with countless genres to love and new discoveries to make. Dive into an unparalleled selection of audiobooks and explore exclusive Audible originals brought to life by top celebrities, renowned experts, and fresh voices.
As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Plus, you can enjoy unlimited access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible originals, and podcasts such as Murder with My Husband.
Honestly, I love Audible because I will get into a story while I'm cleaning or driving. Sometimes I get so hooked listening to a story, I just end up finding new places to clean or just end up sitting in my car, which drives Garrett nuts, but I'm out there sitting there.
New members can explore Audible free for 30 days. Also, this March through May, let Audible sweep you into a realm of intrigue and suspense with their mystery and thriller collection, featuring exclusive new thrillers from their best-selling authors. Their selection is designed to captivate and surprise, ensuring your heart rate remains as elevated as your imagination.
New members can try Audible for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500. That's audible.com/MWMH or text MWMH to 500-500. All right, you guys, this show is sponsored by BetterHelp. And I don't know about you, but when I've been hanging out a lot, going out with friends, dinners, maybe my social battery completely drains and I need to take a few days to have a breather. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you and how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people. Maybe you need some time alone. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I'm a huge believer in therapy. And even if you're like, I just don't feel like I have much to talk about, I don't feel like I have all this trauma, you don't realize how much your body holds on to with stress and just unhappy emotions. It holds on to it. So it's nice to let it out and get it out keep your life in order. And that is something therapy can do for you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/husband today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/husband.
So 20 years after the first original victim, Sarah Spears, went missing, the West Australian police randomly and quite out of the blue make an arrest in this case in December of 2016. The arrest made people's heads spin as the public had no idea they even had another suspect. They held a press conference and announced that 48-year-old Bradley Robert Edwards was being charged with the murder of Sarah Spears in 1996, the murder of Jane Rimmer in 1996, and the murder of Kira Glennon in 1997.
So he was 48, so he would have been 28.
Yes, he would have been in his
20s. Okay.
Bradley was a former telephone technician for a company now named Telstra. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't.
But they were formerly known as Telecom when he worked there. And I feel like this is a very popular company in Australia. I did research it. I Googled it.
I've heard of Telecom,
I feel like. Yes, it's a popular company there, but like outside of there, I had never heard of it.
Okay.
He had drove a company car, which looked like a taxi, and was given a company knife with the Telecom logo on it, which would be brought up later in trial. Bradley denies the charges of murder presented against him, but admits that he did, in fact, rape a 17-year-old girl in a cemetery in 1995, so a year before Sarah went missing.
Why would he just admit that out of the blue?
They came to him with evidence saying, we know you did this. And also some of his earlier crimes he had actually gone to court for and been punished for. And a different woman that he also admits to where he broke into her house and attempted to rape her in 1988.
Well, how is this guy not in jail?
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
So he was a normal guy, steady job, had friends, was a bit of a nerd, and worked with local sports center for kids. So this was also, once the arrest was made, people were like, what? Like, we were expecting a serial killer, and this guy does not look like a serial killer to us. 3 years after the arrest of Bradley Roberts, now 51 years old, he was taken to trial. And I need to preface this again, that they made the arrest and then gave no evidence or anything, information to the public about why they suspected him. All of that would have to wait till trial. So this guy gets arrested and then everyone's like, wow, now we'll finally have answers. And then they have to wait 3 more years.
Well, they're probably trying to save it for trial.
For trial, exactly. Yeah. And that's not a dumb thing. But keeping in mind all of there's no information before this, this just feels super random.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone, you know, put yourself back 3 years before this happens. Everyone's like, they've made an arrest and we have no idea why.
Got
we
it.
Have no idea why they're suspecting this guy. He goes to trial. According to BBC News, the judge only trial, so he just wanted a judge, was Western Australia's longest running and most expensive murder trial to date, taking place over 7 months and included over 200 witnesses at trial. Yeah. And since day one of trial, the information everyone had been wanting came spilling out.
Okay.
So all of the answers really come out.
That's good, though. I'm glad that everything's
coming together. So it turns out there had been a ton of DNA evidence in this case that just couldn't be tested back then and that the public hadn't been told about. But as time went on and DNA testing advanced, new detectives came in and took a look at this case and were like, hey, we have new technology that can maybe help us with this DNA. There was a scraping under Kira Glennon's thumb that had not been tested back then. But when tested, it came back as an unknown male, but also matched an unsolved rape from a cemetery in 1995.
Wow. Okay.
And this realization was made back in 2008.
That's crazy.
So if you think about it, police knew that they had a match to an unsolved rape in 2008 and didn't tell anyone. This case was just cold and stagnant, but they had made this huge discovery and just didn't tell the public about it.
It's pretty crazy that DNA advanced that much, though, that they were able to
make that connection through it, right?
Uh-huh.
So in 2016, so they make this, but then they're like, we still don't know who did this unsolved rape.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't help us. It just gives us a little bit more evidence because there's another case to look at. So in 2016, after locals heard about the connection to the old attack in 1995, so local people start to, you know, they talk to a cop who talked to a cop who told a civilian who told another civilian, and then locals start to, they've made a connection in the, yeah, in the serial killer case. It was suggested to police that they double check a break-in that had happened in the 80s and check that against the matched samples. Whoa. So people start talking and they're like, well, since we know he did it before, why don't you check this attempted rape of a break-in? And I know it's not a same case, but we could at least, there was DNA in that case and we could pull evidence against it. The break-in rape DNA was in fact a match. So now in 2016, police have this evidence that now not only did he do the three serial killings, he also raped someone in a cemetery and then also attempted to rape someone by breaking into their house.
In the 80s? He would have been young. He would have been what, like 16 to 18, somewhere around there?
So police had now drawn the conclusion without the public knowing that in 1988, a man broke into a home but was run out. And then in 1995, that same man abducted a 17-year-old off the street.
Oh my God.
Drove
gosh.
Her to a cemetery where he beat and then raped her and left her to die, but she survived. And then in 1996 through 1997, went on to become the Claremont serial killer that everyone knows about.
Holy crap.
They had his DNA, but they didn't have him. There's no match. When they run the DNA, there's no match in CODIS. So they're like, great, we now have more cases, but we still don't have the guy.
We need the guy. So, yeah, so how'd they find the guy?
And all this is happening without the public even knowing that they continue to make these conclusions,
so
right?
So I assume they're basically waiting at this point for that guy's DNA to hit
someone, him to get arrested, him to come, you know, get a DUI, and then his DNA, gets something to happen. As they're waiting for this something to happen, they're also going, are there any other cases that we haven't looked at that could he could have done, right? So police found in evidence when looking back at the 1988 home invasion attempt by our serial killer that there had been another attempted break-in in the same city that year.
Oh my God.
And they hadn't originally drawn these two together, but then after looking, we're like, maybe it was the same guy. This other attempt was a man in a woman's nightie, like a dress, a woman's nightgown, which I thought was strange. Had opened a sliding glass door to break in, but then they were awake, and so he was scared off. He left four fingerprints on the door in this break-in. And when police run those fingerprints, they come back to a man named Bradley Robert Edwards.
No way.
This is how they found him.
Okay.
He was already in the database with his fingerprints, but not for his DNA. And the reason he was in the database for his fingerprints was because he had attacked a social worker while on a job once and gotten arrested for it. He was given probation for that attack. He attacked her. Nothing happened. Like, she ran off. He got scared. He ran off. She's like, hey, you attacked me. He gets arrested. He gets put on probation for it. And he keeps his job at telecom. Like, they don't, even though he was on the job when he made this attack, they don't fire him. They needed to obtain Bradley's DNA, though, to make a positive ID to the Claremont serial killer. Because think, all they're thinking is, we have these four fingerprints ID'd, and now we have this unknown DNA. We'll run them, and we'll run his DNA. We'll get his DNA somehow and run it and see if it's the same guy.
If it matches, okay.
So they follow him into a movie theater. Undercover cops follow him into a movie theater.
No way.
And when he gets up to leave the theater, he was drinking a Sprite and he left the Sprite in the cup holder when he stood up to leave.
It's like a total, like a movie.
Yeah,
they follow in, grab the straw.
Literally, they wait for everyone to clear out. They bag it. They do it like protocol, everything. They know they have to be smart about it. They bag it. They take it in. They test the DNA. Bada bing, bada boom. We have our serial killer. It's the same guy.
Crazy.
So this comes out of trial. Jane and Kira's throats had been cut with what they thought was a knife in a sawing motion. So it wasn't like a slit.
Oh my gosh.
A sawing motion.
Okay, yeah.
There had been a telecom knife found near one of the bodies that had been dumped years earlier. When they found the body, they found this knife, but didn't know who to, you know.
Yep.
But then once they had him, they were like, this is a solid piece of evidence. We found this knife years ago before we were even on to you. Detectives managed to match his DNA to a fragment found under Kira's fingernail. Prosecutors said that there were material fibers found on the bodies of Kira and Jane that had also come from Bradley's clothing and car. So they take the DNA evidence on them and say their bodies were in his car at one point.
Okay.
Jane and Kira's bodies were found in the same pose, but just mirrored. All this, these facts about the case come out at trial, that their bodies when found had actually been posed in the same pose, but just mirrored.
So he totally was like a serial killer. Then.
Oh, totally.
I mean,
and I would imagine that Sarah's body is probably posed in the same way.
Ugh.
So Kira's body had been covered by leaves. Well, both of the bodies had been covered, but this one had been covered by leaves that were pulled from a tall tree that was nearby. They made that connection when they were investigating. Okay. And this was a clue for them at the time because the tree was high. And so they were like, he would have had been at least this tall to be able to reach up and pull branches. So they had like a cap of how tall their suspect had to be. Again, information that wasn't released to the public. Like, we know our suspect has to be at least this tall, you know. A little bit before the arrest of Bradley, police had randomly released video footage that they had had for years of Sarah the night she went missing.
I was going to ask about cameras, but then I just figured out
there was nothing. Yeah. So there was, and people were like, hey, where's the video footage? They never came out with it. And they were like, maybe the cameras weren't working or something. Years later, a little bit before the arrest, police randomly are like, hey, let's hold a press conference. We have this video footage of Sarah, and they release it. And this is a huge bombshell for everyone because police know that there's activity going on in this case, but everyone else is like, this case is dead. And now police finally release this video footage of Sarah. So it was huge. Like, everyone was speculating. It was the biggest piece of evidence in this case. And at trial, more of this footage comes out, but that part hasn't been released to the public. So we still only have the little bit that was released before he was arrested. And this footage seems to be a big deal to a lot of the sources, but I'm guessing because a lot of the sources were before this most recent trial. And so this was the biggest piece of evidence. But really, and I do get the video footage is of someone minutes before they go missing forever is a big deal. So don't get me wrong. I understand that's a big deal. But there's nothing in this video footage that points to Bradley or points to anything that happened.
No way am I a professional on this, but I would assume that's probably why they didn't release all this, because if it went to court and they found him I feel like there wasn't enough to convict him. So yes, there was never.
So they release it and there's a guy that comes up in this footage. Her friends leave. Remember, her friends left her and she was going to keep hanging out. She's leaning against this pole. And in the footage, a guy walks up and she recognizes him. She goes, hey, like, you can't hear it, but you can see her wave, and they sit and they have a conversation, and everyone before trial is like, oh my gosh, this guy killed her. Like, this guy killed her. It's a huge deal. And then I can't get clarification on whether or not that guy was Bradley.
I
don't think it is, because I think people would clarify this guy that was this huge bombshell in this footage was Bradley after they made the connection to the two, but it wasn't. I don't think it was. No one clarifies that it was. And so to me, it's kind of like, I see that the weight this video has in this case, because it's Sarah's last moments and there's something especially eerie and just, almost spiritual about seeing someone in their last moments before tragedy happens, right? Yeah. But at the same time, it has absolutely nothing to do with the conviction of Bradley.
Got it.
And so to me, it's like, it's a big deal, but
are you sure it's not him, or are you not sure?
I'm not sure because there was no one that ever came forward and said yes and no. I did find a YouTube comment that said it was, but also I feel like it was a YouTube comment. But yeah, no, there was no source that specified that the man in the video footage from Sarah was Bradley. And I feel like that would have been huge in the case if it had been. Despite Bradley's plea of not guilty, he comes and says, I didn't do these murders. The judge declares him guilty of Jane Rimmer and Kira Glennon's murders. He says, Bradley, I do believe that you did kill Sarah. There's not enough evidence to charge you with that without her body.
Yeah.
And I want to not risk you appealing on that. And so I'm not going to charge you with Sarah's murder, because I don't want you to have the ability to appeal. So I'm only going to charge you with the two. And he's sentenced, and Bradley never ever released where Sarah's body is. So
is he sentenced for life, like life in prison? Yep. Will never get out without
never
parole?
Never get out. Yep. Okay. I actually think can be given parole, but it's too late. Like, he'll probably be dead.
So did he ever admit that he killed them? Or did he still go down saying,
gone down saying he didn't do it. And police came forward and were like, hey, please tell us where Sarah's body is for her family. We just talked about this in an earlier episode. It's the worst thing you can do to a family is, I killed her, but I'm not going to tell you where she is.
No, I didn't do it.
He said, I didn't do it.
Oh my gosh.
And her body still messed up. Yeah, but that is the now updated and solved case of the Claremont serial killer.
it's crazy to see a case, because I mean, you see them quite a bit, all these cold cases from the 90s, the 80s, whenever it is, yeah. And they get solved years later.
From DNA, we've just seen a huge shift in that, and it's awesome.
It's good. It's
this
great.
Case was solely solved because of DNA testing.
Yeah.
I mean, it took a lot of strands and a lot of effort and a lot of testing and a lot of guessing, but you know.
Do they think that he might have killed other people? Or do you think it was just those three?
I think those three and then the attacks he had done previously, the attempted attacks. I don't think that they think he killed anyone else.
I always wonder that about serial killers. Like if there's people who had been killed and nobody has any idea.
I don't think he would be the one to admit it either if he's not even willing to admit that he did the Claremont killings.
So messed up.
Yeah. And just, like, he had been married. It's just weird. It's just strange. It just feels
all of
weird.
Yeah, that's sad. I'm glad they solved it, though. I am.
Yes, I am glad, too. And it's also crazy because the police did receive a lot of heat for this case because it felt to the public as if it had been dead for years.
I feel like they did a pretty good job.
I do, too, behind the scenes, right? Like, they might not have been openly communicating with the public.
They had everything ready, though.
They solved this, you know what I mean? And so they did receive a lot of heat for focusing only on Lance and focusing only on the taxi drivers. But it just behind the scenes, with new eyes and everything, they did actually take this and solve it by using pretty good detective work, in my opinion. But yeah, that is the case of the Claremont murders. If you want to see any imagery that goes along with this, go ahead and watch our YouTube video. It's all included in there. If you're not on YouTube, you're just on podcast right now, you can check out our social media for that. It's Murder With My Husband. And just another reminder about our Patreon episode coming out next week. It's going to be super fun, so go ahead and check that out. We will see you guys next week with another episode. I love it.
And I hate it.
Goodbye.